So if someone meditates and becomes maybe a little bit calmer than they usually would, it's a fair question to ask, what do you do with that calm? And one of the answers could be that with that calm, you investigate a little more carefully some matter, something going on in your life. Try to understand something. With the idea that when the mind is a little bit calmer, less agitated, it gives you a better vantage point to understand what is happening with you and with the world around you. So one of the areas to investigate with a calm mind or not calm mind is the realm of speech. And so I wanted to talk about three different areas of speech. Kind of inner speech, outer speech, and the bridge between them. And then I want to end the evening with telling you a story from the Buddhist scriptures. The point being that Buddhists are not always nice. What do you think of that? So now, having to do with speech. So, I think one of the things that's been very interesting for me in doing this meditation practice, mindfulness practice, can people hear okay? The speaker is working okay? So one of the things that's been interesting for me is the investigation of the whole realm of thinking. And more specifically, many areas of thinking that's interesting to look at. But in terms of speech, some of us, when we think, we're kind of like talking to ourselves. Some people think more in images. And it's very interesting to investigate or explore how we talk to ourselves. What's the nature, what's the quality of that inner voice that does that inner thinking. And, you know, you can listen to someone talk a foreign language that you don't understand, and you can listen to the quality of their voice as they speak. And you can kind of tell sometimes, you know, oh, it's a really harsh voice, they're angry, they're really shy, they're hesitant, they're, you know, very quiet. You know, there's all kinds of things you can notice from the tone of the voice, the speed in which they're speaking, the energy with which they're speaking, even without understanding the content of what they say. So in the same way, we can. Many of us are kind of caught up in the content of our thinking, the subject, the ideas we're thinking about. But with a little bit of a calm mind, it's possible to step back and get a sense, to feel, sense the quality of that inner voice, the tone. And some people are quite surprised when they start paying attention to the way in which you talk to yourself, the way you talk in there. Some people find, I mean, there's a whole range of what's possible, right? But sometimes it can be quite harsh. And so there are people who I meet, who I know, who seem like very, very kind, gentle souls, people. And they report how incredibly harsh and judgmental and critical they are inside their own heads towards themselves often. And kind of, sometimes I'm a little surprised at the difference between the gentleness on the outside and what they report on the inside. And so you can sometimes if you listen to your own, the tone of your own voice, sometimes, you know, you might find different days, different times, different kind of intensities, different tones, different kind of emotions almost expressed in the voice itself that's doing the talking. So you might notice that, you know, a lot of your thinking is anxious. You might notice a lot of your thinking is regret. You might think a lot of your thinking is very hesitant, like you're unsure of yourself, and so you don't know, you're quite sure where to stand, where to go, and kind of just jumping around, looking for something. A lot of thinking is kind of looking and searching. Or there might be the thinking is very confident, very clear. And so you see that sense of confidence and clarity, or gentleness, or kindness in the inner voice. So you can kind of feel that in the tone. Sometimes the inner voice can seem very loud, like you're kind of, you know, screaming in there. And sometimes it can be very soft and like a faint whisper. So it's possible to notice these things. It's also possible to notice something about the common themes that we think about. And so not getting caught up in the details of any particular thought that you have, thought train you're having, but to kind of you know, just notice that, oh, over a course of a day or a course of a month or a course of a period of time, it seems that regularly you're thinking about the same kind of thing. So some people are very much future thinkers. They spend a lot of time planning. And that's kind of like where the most kind of common default place their mind goes. Some people's minds go more into remembering. Some people's minds go more into fantasy. And so it's possible to, you know, from that calm mind to begin to kind of noticing a little bit about what goes on in your mind, in your thinking. And it's a very important skill to have, very important ability to do, because without that ability to track oneself, some people can be strangers to themselves. They don't quite understand what motivates them, what drives them, what their beliefs are, what their feelings are, and a whole range of things. And so sometimes people act, unconsciously or subconsciously or not knowingly, because they don't even know what they think or what's going on in there, or they're surprised. I've known people, plenty of people, who, especially if they go on retreat, when they spend a lot of time being uninterrupted from yourself. And they're surprised by how persistent some of the activity in their own minds is. They had no idea, for example, some people have no idea how judgmental it can be in there. And I was judging all the time. I'm judging everyone or myself and this and that. Or I had no idea that fear was such a basic, persistent foundation for what's happening with me. There's a variety of things. Usually the people who are most surprised are the ones surprised by how kind of unhealthy or what it is they discover. So it's possible then to notice, what's going on inside, your inner voice, dialogue, these kinds of things going on. And all the different Buddhist teachings on wise or right speech apply to oneself as well. Sometimes people think that the Buddhist teachings on right speech have only to do with the verbal speech you do out loud. But it's very interesting to turn it towards yourself and say, the way I'm talking to myself, is it true? Is it kind? Is it really healthy or beneficial for myself? And is it timely? These are the four basic guidelines that the Buddha gave for speeches: to speak things that are true, that are kind, that are helpful, and that are timely. To speak at the right time. So, spending a lot of time in fantasy or maybe isn't so true. Spending a lot of time being critical or angry maybe is not kind. Spending a lot of time rehearsing all the reasons why you should be guilty maybe is not helpful. I regularly tell people that being guilty is a waste of good energy, and that you're much better off channeling the energy that's going into guilt into trying to do better in the future. Make amends. And rather than kind of stay there lingering in the past. So, to look at all these things in ourselves. And then there's outer speech and how we engage in the world. And so to notice what we say, how we say it, to notice the tone of our own voice, the motivations and the quality of our voice as we speak. And that can vary in the course of the day, in the course of the conversation, which is quite appropriate to vary. But sometimes we speak in ways that maybe we'd rather not speak. I'm very fond of the couple of little sayings about speech. One of them is, it can take years and years to develop a good friend. And it can take 30 seconds to ruin the friendship with our speech. So speech is very, very powerful. And then trying to take back your words after you've said them is like closing the barn door after the horse has run away. It's It doesn't help that much after you've spoken it. So to develop an ability to track ourselves and be present for as we speak, then we can sometimes speak in a wiser way, more useful way. And that's part of the ability to look at oneself and one's own inner mind, what one is thinking and feeling and planning to say. One can, make some choices before one blurts things out. So, part of the reason why mindfulness of speaking is such a very helpful practice of mindfulness is that it can give you a very quick window into the depths of what makes you work as a person, what motivates you. And you can do it with a very simple question, very quick, simple exercise. And that is, it doesn't mean it's so simple to do, but a very simple question. That is, start questioning why you say what you say. And you might go through a day and ask yourself, why am I saying this? Why am I saying this? Why am I saying this? And probably you'll find that a lot of things you say are not just generally useful public service announcements. That behind what you're saying, you're trying to accomplish something. You're trying to have an influence on someone. Maybe you're trying to get them to see you in a certain way. You're trying to protect yourself in a certain way. Perhaps you're trying to get them to do what you want them to do, what you want them to do. And so you're saying something and kind of have an influence of some sort or other. And so start questioning and looking, why am I saying what I'm doing? You might discover that some of the things you say are not as innocent as you thought. And as you start discovering what motivates you to speak, you start discovering some depth of yourself, encountering yourself in a way that is very, very helpful in the Buddhist path for clarifying, purifying, deepening oneself. So there's inner speech, there's outer speech, and then there's a bridge between them. And the bridge between them is somehow already been covered, but the bridge between them has to do with intention. And so one of the key areas of mindfulness practice is considering what is the motivation or the intention for what you're going to say. Is it kind? Is it... Oh, are we back? Somehow did I disappear? It seemed to change suddenly. Is it kind? Is it true? Is it helpful? And is it timely, what we're going to say? So these are very important things to explore and see, what is the intention to be helpful? Is the intention to be kind? Is it true here? So to look at the intention, the motivation. And it's much easier to look at the motivation and intentionality if we have a calm mind. A calm mind, we have enough time to consider these things and look at them. So a lot of Buddhists hear these things. A lot of Buddhists hear about the importance of being speaking, these guidelines of kind, true, helpful, and timely. So, does that mean that Buddhists are always nice? I say this because I think that a lot of people who encounter Buddhist practice and try to live this way sometimes try too hard to be nice at the expense of at a certain kind of expense. And so there was a discourse of the Buddhas where a man, prince, comes to the Buddha and he thinks he has a trick question. The prince is a disciple of another spiritual teacher. And so he thinks he's going to kind of trick the Buddha. And he says to the Buddha, do you ever say anything unwelcome or disagreeable to others? Or unwelcome and unpleasant for others? And the reason he thinks it's a trick question is that if the Buddha says, no, I never say anything unwelcome and unpleasant, then he says, but once you reprimanded one of your monks named Devadatta, and he was really upset. So you're contradicting yourself, you're lying. Because in fact, you did once say something unwelcome. It was very unwelcome and unpleasant to Devadatta, who was a bad guy. but still, it was unpleasant to hear, be reprimanded. And so if he says he never says anything unpleasant, then he's lying. And if he says he does occasionally say things which are unwelcome and unpleasant, then how can he be a Buddha? Because, you know, Buddhists are supposed to be all good. So he goes to the Buddha, kind of all prepared. I'm going to trick the Buddha. I'm going to put him in a tight spot. And the Buddha hears the question, and the Buddha says, "Oh, that's the kind of question that can't be answered with one answer. with a simple answer." And then the prince says, "Oh, I've been seen through. You know, oh well, so much for that." And then the Buddha goes on to explain the longer answer, which in short he says, the Buddha will only say things if they're true, only say things if they're kind, and maybe timely. I forget the whole thing that he gives there. But if it's true, if it's kind, and if it's helpful, and if it's unpleasant and unwelcome for the person who's going to hear it, then the Buddha knows the time to say that. What do you think of that? So that's how, you know, Buddhists sometimes are not nice. You know, sometimes we say things which are unpleasant and unwelcome to others. Now, I gave this talk similar to this yesterday at Spirit Rock for the family retreat up there. And this seems very interesting to a lot of the parents. And the impression I got in the discussion afterwards, that there were quite a few parents in these Buddhist practitioner types who have been struggling with the idea that they're never supposed to say anything unpleasant to their children. That, you know, Buddhists are always supposed to be smiling and nice and this and that. You know, and if your kid gets hurt or feels upset or angry, then you haven't figured out the skillful thing to say. You know, there's just the right skillful thing that diffuses the problem and gets them to be, be well behaved, I guess. And so it's kind of surprising to them to hear that the Buddha sometimes said things which were not nice, which is my way of saying some things which were unpleasant for the person to hear, or unwelcome. And so now, when do we say things? When is it okay to say things to people which are unwelcome by them? How do we know? How do we have the wisdom to know that it's okay to say it to someone? That's a big question. And that's the question I leave to you. How do you think? When do you think? What criteria do you use to decide when it's appropriate and helpful to say something which is unwelcome and unpleasant for your person listening to hear? So, hopefully some of you have some thoughts about that. Yes, so if you could use a mic. Some people have the hearing assistant device, so I can't hear unless... You want to see here? Here.
Well, I guess I would do it if something if I thought someone was going to hurt themselves or someone else.
Mm-hmm. So if someone was going to hurt themselves or someone else? Great, thank you. Is that on? It's on when the light underneath the bottom is on. Yeah, okay, sorry.
I think it also depends on the relationship. Your parent, you have more of a responsibility. I mean, even before coming to the point of hurting, you mm-hmm. have to direct the mm-hmm. kid. Even if it is unpleasant.
So it depends on the relationship that you have. So some with children, parents, especially with children, maybe have some responsibility to direct the kids in a certain direction, even when it isn't immediately harmful. Mm-hmm. Maybe. So the relationship is important here in the front. Oh.
I do struggle with this a lot, and I've really caused some big problems in our extended family by believing that I met all of those criteria. And I mean, it's, you know, like one whole group of the family just completely shut me out for 15 years at one point.
Because you were true, you were kind, you were timely, and you thought you were being helpful.
Yes. And so recently I have really, 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 truly reevaluated how I answer those questions. So one example is that I have a teenage cousin whom I believe is selling drugs. And made the very difficult decision to keep my mouth shut about it, truly not knowing if I'm doing more harm than by doing that, but by not opening my mouth. But as I have made so many mistakes, I really come to realize more and more that life has a path, and that in some ways letting people live out that path and suffer their natural consequences is in some ways wiser than believing that you have the power within your words and within yourself to make a change in them.
Mm-hmm. So not taking responsibility for other people sometimes. Okay, thank you very much. So here in the front I saw a hand. You know, to pass it to the front here. Oh, there's another mic here.
I was just thinking that it may have something to do with, well, what's my motivation? What's going on in my heart? Is there hostility involved in my not being nice or saying something nice? What's it motivated by?
Mm-hmm. So what's motivation? Is there hostility in not being nice? Or maybe it was a mistake to have used the word, you know, nice. Maybe sometimes, you know, we can nicely say things that are unpleasant. So straight back, you can pass the mic back.
Well, I lead a creative team, and I don't know if it makes this easier, but when I'm talking to my team, I sort of like, every time we start a project, I sort of start the meeting with like, anything you say or do that I guarantee you I will not take personally. Mm. And then, but it's sort of also a two-way street. It's a guarantee that I'm giving them that, you know, everything I say or do, they should not take personally as well. So it's a two-way street. And I always have to be clear that there's nothing I will say or do that is designed to hurt you.
So you set the agreement beforehand.
Yeah, I set up an environment where everything is always welcome. Yeah, you know, and expected.
That's good. It's nice. So so sometimes there might be an agreement, a request even from someone. Give me feedback. I don't want to really hear it, but I don't exactly want to hear it, but I really want some feedback. And so then you have permission, then you can, you know, say all kinds of unpleasant things. Thank you.
I think it's okay to be unpleasant when you're trying to get someone's attention.
Being unpleasant when you're trying to get someone's attention. Can you give an example?
When someone doesn't understand that you're angry and you need them to know that, or that you feel they've come across the line, or you need to let them know that they're violating your boundaries in whatever way.
Good. Great. Thank you.
Confusing the message.
The message with the messenger. They might not like what I have to say, but I don't have to. If I truly believe that what I'm saying is coming, being motivated out of a space of love, I have to walk through my fear of whether they're going to like me or not. I mean, I have a lot of people have a lot of stuff about whether people are going to like them, and there's a lot of codependency issues like that. But, you know, if somebody can separate the message from the message and realize that they can still love me even though they don't like what I have to tell them at the time. So that's kind of how I deal with that. Mm-hmm. So, and then I don't have to have everybody like me either, because, so... Thanks.
So sometimes it say something unpleasant. If you feel it's necessary to say something unpleasant to someone or unwelcome to someone, then it's good to know what the relationship is, as someone said earlier. So is it a situation, a family situation, a work situation, or a friend situation where there's space, permission for that, where people are going to understand what's how it's being offered, and. If you try to give feedback to someone when there isn't an understanding or permission or a context for doing that, it can be misunderstood dramatically.
I think the four things to watch for are good to start with, but I would think sometime if I hit 2 or 3 out of 4, maybe I could put a disclaimer that I'm not certain this is the right time to say this, or I'm not just expose the other part that I have doubt about, that it's maybe this is not true, but I think it's necessary and this is the right time, and, uh-huh. and I think it's true or something.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Yeah, straight there. We have a mic here on this side of the room. They all wondered. There's two bikes.
I think short-term and long-term considerations come up for me. If in postponing a conversation today means I'm highly likely to have a more difficult conversation in the future, I sit with how to have it today.
Good, thank you. Here, so you can pass the mic back to.
I believe that if you're going to tell someone something, if it's true from your heart, you should not be concerned about how that other individual will take it, because you can never tell. You may be telling someone what you see, what you have observed, but that individual will take it either the right way or the wrong way. So then you may need to look at that person and determine, and of course, say it the right way. You talked about the correct speech. So if you use the correct speech, then I believe you may be able to give your statement or have that statement taken the way that it should be taken, without any emotion in your voice or being judgmental. I think that's one of the issues that we have all, that I've heard, is that we are being judgmental because we're wondering how that person will take it, whether it's right or wrong.
Great.
So as long as you state it from your heart, I think that you can express your feelings to the other person.
Thank you. So there's certainly speaking from our heart, but then there's the other side of that, which I think you alluded to. You didn't say it this way, but that are we in touch with a person enough to notice how it's received? Because sometimes people are so different from each other, so many different states and situations in their life, and sometimes you can say something that's quite even friendly and nice, but you think it's coming from the heart, but you're not really tuned into the person to know what their situation is. And one example, many years ago, I went to work. And there was a shift change, and I think I was leaving, and someone was coming in to his shift, and we were in the changing room, and I said something kind of jovial. I think it was kind. It was a little bit kind of jovial and fun, and to him, And it really was painful for him to hear, because one of his best friends had just died. And so he had come through the door, and I had assumed it was just everything was like how it had often been there. And I didn't take the time to really tune into him, to know where he was at. So the idea of being in touch with the person you're speaking to and really being able to hear deeply. Because there's, you know, in the discourse it says, the Buddha sometimes says things which are unwelcome and unpleasant. It doesn't say unwelcome and hurtful. And I think that hurtful has there's two parties to hurt. There's your intention. You can have the intention not to hurt, but not knowing how a person's going to receive it. Another example of comes to mind is, well, maybe I won't tell you that story. The story was something like this, that it was on retreat. And sometimes on meditation retreats, people will go through some emotional catharsis. And there was a woman who was crying quite a bit, sobbing in the hallway up in the retreat center. And the guideline in retreat center, in these Vipassana retreats, is you leave people alone. Unless someone's being hurt or something, but you know, if someone's crying, you leave them alone. And if you're really concerned, you go tell a teacher, and the teacher can look into it. And but this one person retreated and saw another one crying. And so he went over and put his arm around her, or you know, touched her nicely. It seemed like a very nice, you know, comforting thing to do. But what he didn't know was that the kind of person he was very similar to the kind of person who had abused this woman earlier in life. And so the association was so strong for her that it actually tripped her out even more. You know, so in terms of what causes pain or hurt, it's kind of, you know, it involves not only our intention, but also the situation of the person who we're speaking to. So I think that in order to give feedback to people or say something unpleasant, if you're not tuned into the person to some degree, then maybe it's not the right time. Yes.
I have a question about when no speech becomes wrong speech.
When no speech becomes wrong speech.
And I ask that because I typically err, especially if I can think of very specific personal relationships where for whatever reason I have difficulty connecting or overcoming my own ill will. And I err on the side of just not saying anything.
Uh-huh.
At the cost of making the relationship, I feel much more inauthentic.
Mm. So maybe, I don't know how to answer your question. It's a really good question. When to be quiet is a really good question. And
I think I'm quiet too often.
And there's a lot of wisdom that can go into being quiet and knowing when to be quiet. But there's also learning different skills of how to speak. And so sometimes you know, this famous thing of making I statements can be very helpful. So sometimes instead of saying, you know, if you feel like you just want to tell someone, you're just lousy, you know, you say, when you said that, I felt really hurt. And so I think that more often than not, probably, you could find a way to reword your concern in a way that doesn't feel like you're offending or criticizing someone, but you're making it in the first-person terms, but this is how it's like for me. And if you can't say in first-person terms what it's like for you in the relationship, then I have some questions about the relationship.
Some relationships can't be avoided.
And sometimes there's a place... And sometimes there's a time for silence. The... you know, when the idea is, you know, is it kind? Is it true? Is it helpful? If it's not helpful, the suggestion is don't say it. Some people feel like they need to say, get it off their chest or say something. But if it's clearly not going to help the situation, then sometimes it's better to, or if you don't have a way to say it that's helpful, maybe it's better to be quiet. Because occasionally I do that. Sometimes I don't say anything. And sometimes I bide my time. And I spend time reflecting about it, wondering about it, feeling my way, seeing what's going on. And then, you know, I try not to ignore a situation, but I try to kind of live with it. And then maybe at some point some wisdom will come up some better understanding, and I can come back and engage in the conversation. And so I do this. I've done this sometimes when I've been angry with someone. I've gone off and on my own, go for a long walk or something, and been with my anger, I'm not avoiding the situation as a, you know, once and for all. I realize this has to be addressed. This issue has to be addressed. But right now, I'm too angry to address it. And so let me be with myself for a while, and then I'll be with the anger. And walking helps me a lot in this. And then at some point, if there's a shift of understanding where I kind of drop below the anger and realize that there's either fear or hurt connected to the anger, then I find that I can go back and have a much more productive conversation. And say, oh, you know, when you said X, I felt really afraid. I felt really hurt. You know, that's a very different conversation than saying, I'm angry with you.
Kind of inner argument or debate I have about what you've been talking about is, to what extent do you respect the integrity of the other person and just not say anything? So if, for example, it was something that you thought the person could improve on and you thought it met all the criteria that you mentioned, to what extent do you just not say anything because that other person has the right to be who they are?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And are you simply just expressing your personal opinion?
That's a good question. So it's a little bit related to, it's a little bit related to what you said. Sometimes it's useful to ask permission before you say something. You know, I have something I'd like to tell you. It's just, are you open for some, you know, are you open now? Are you open for business? Are you open? I know some Buddhist teachers I know who, when their colleagues hear them give a Dharma talk, they say, the colleagues might go to them and say, I'd like to say something about your talk. Is this a good time? And I know some teachers say, no, not until tomorrow. I just gave it. I feel kind of, you know, vulnerable. And, you know, tomorrow you can come and do it. So anyway, to ask permission sometimes works. Is this the right time? Is this a good time? I'd like to say something. So I saw one more, all the way in the back. Yeah. Is there...
In business, and say you're leading a company or where it's quite chaotic, you're having to deal with multiple problems, your Buddhist training isn't quite up to where it ought to be for you to be a leader, but you're shooting from the hip and you're having enormous problems just getting, say, your product out, and then you start sniping at your people, and then there are a few people you ought to fire. at least you think you ought to fire, and then your own self-doubt comes in, and I just would say, you know, I'm just saying what personally happens to me. I start being really a son of a bitch.
So when you're a son of a bitch...
Yeah, am I a conscious son of a bitch?
When you're a conscious son of a bitch, how would you like to be... What kind of feedback would be helpful for you at that time?
I think, you know, I've been around enough that I think they give me enough time to calm down.
Give him a wide pasture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So thank you for this evening, and I hope that you don't succumb to that very common Buddhist trap of trying excessively to be nice. Though if you need to err, it's probably better to err on the side of being nice. Thank you.